You know, now that I'm where I am, nobody asks me about my failures. And some of them were significant. And the song is, you got to know when to hold them and when to fold them. And a lot of times you don't know that. Like, for instance, I know that I've been successful only because it's behind me, not in front of me. You don't know until you sell the business or get rid of it, because you could even have a great business. Like I was dealing with somebody yesterday, they went from 3 million to 10 million, and then they can't figure out why they're making less money than they did at 3 million. And we finally figured out their pricing model was wrong. But you just don't know. You really don't. And you've got to ask yourself, step out of your being, if you will, and say, what can I change? Because tomorrow is going to be just like today unless you change something. And can I do that change? And if the answer is there's nothing I could change, that's a stopping point.
Welcome to the Three Steps to Thrive podcast, where each show will show you three simple, practical, and actionable steps to improve your life or your business. Now, here's your host, James Lamb. And guess what? That's me.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. My name is James. I'm your host for Three Steps to Thrive. Today, I'm thrilled to have my friend and my networking buddy, Jeff Prager. Jeff, say hello.
Hello.
So Jeff's kind of an interesting story. I have his bio here, and I think Jeff's actually being quite modest here. But let me read some of this out to you, and it reads like, you know, the greatest hits of a certain decade, because he's done so much. But Jeff Prager, with a P, is the co-founder of the CFO Project, a cash flow. Sorry, let me try that again. My goodness. Jeff Prager, co-founder of the CFO Project, is a cash flow king. His company has one purpose: to help you make more money, which all sounds really good to everybody, right? And he says, we created the system where we go through your numbers on a monthly basis and show you what to look at, when to look at it, and how to interpret it, and what to do about it. So essentially, all of those four W's and the H, right? The only one you don't have is Y there. And you don't need to understand accounting or finance, which is perfect. And that's sort of what everybody's looking for. Now, Jeff is a CPA, and he's been doing it for well over 35 years. He also has had several successful multi-million dollar companies. And let me just name three of them really quickly here. One, he's the founder of Ashworth Golf Clothing. He is the CFO slash partner of a large land development company. And he's the owner of Strauss Homes, which was once rated as the second largest privately owned home builder in Colorado, and then top 100 privately owned companies of Colorado back, we'll call it a couple years, shall we, Jeff?
That would be fine.
Yeah, about 16 years ago, but it's fine. So my first question to you, so there's a lot of great stuff there, right? There's a lot of a wide breadth of knowledge, and I'm sure you have your reasons for doing what you do. My question to you is, why have you not sent me golf gear? I didn't realize this about you,
Well, first of all, it was golf clothing, number one.
And I'll take that as well. I'll take whatever I can get my hands on, Jeff.
Yeah. And number two, when they moved to California, I didn't go with them. So, and I don't regret that, because I built some fairly nice sized companies after that. But it was really funny. It's my specialty is real estate, financial projections, stuff like that in the accounting world. And they came to me because it was a real estate play in the beginning. We were going to build driving ranges.
Oh, interesting.
And when I looked at their model, I said, it doesn't work. And they were kind of like, oh my gosh, what do we do now? So then they decided to go into golf clothing, and I go, I don't know anything about golf clothing. And they go, you don't need to. We want you for what you know about doing financial projections and helping us get capital and stuff like that. And that's how I ended up being a co-founder, is not because of my golf knowledge, because I don't even play golf, which is the irony of everything.
I can't tell if that was a pun or not. The irony, right?
Oh, I didn't even pick up on that. That's a good one. I'll have to remember that.
You're the one that said it. It wasn't me. Oh, it's a good thing we're both. Well, I'm a dad, and I'm pretty sure you are too, Jeff. Right? So it's a good thing we're dads. Okay. Cool. So you've had a lot of really interesting stuff here. Now, you know, the Ashworth thing is kind of funny because, as you said, they kind of came to you. It was a mistake. It wasn't a mistake to come to you, but it was a mistaken business plan, if you understand what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
What they originally based the premise on was incorrect. So how much of your success do you think is being in the right place at the right time? Or how much success do you think is from proper planning?
It's an attitude, without a doubt. I believe that luck is something you make by being open-minded, walking through every door that opens, because it wasn't always that way. I mean, for every one of my successes, there's a couple of failures at a minimum, mm-hmm. where we got involved with the wrong thing. But you know what? You hope. It's just like being a batter. If you hit the ball 33% of the time, you're doing very, very well. So the idea is, A, to make your luck by talking to everybody, keeping an open mind, doing the things you need to do to be successful. And then the skill, I've honed my skills. I'm one of my core values is lifetime learning and growth. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I retired 13 years ago. And I couldn't stand it because there was just, I wasn't being mentally challenged. And so for the last 13 years, what I've been doing is just helping other businesses achieve success. And when you consider that I grew up in a project in New Haven, Connecticut, to get the opportunities I did was unimaginable.
Yeah.
Unimaginable.
And just so people know, because our listeners from all over the world, a project is a low income subsidized housing situation.
Yeah, yeah, we weren't subsidized, but it wasn't a bad place to live, but it wasn't a great place to live either.
Was it one of your mandates to leave? Was that one of the things that you wanted to do more than anything else?
No, I mean, my father did. We eventually got out of there, and he had matter of fact, I wrote a book about it called The Peddler's Son. My dad was a door-to-door salesman, and eventually he got enough money so we could get out of the project and move into a, it was all about the school district, just like it is today, mm-hmm. Get us into a good school district. And then it was my father's effort that got us out of the project, not mine. But he did make sure that all four of his children became professionals. His parents died during the Great Recession of 1929, and he couldn't go to college because he was a teenager when they died, and his older sister brought him up, and they couldn't afford to send him to college. Mm-hmm. So his goal was to get his four children through college, and all of us became professionals in different fields, but we're all professionals. So
yes. He must have been very proud to see that, I imagine.
Yeah, I would say that that's very true. Yeah, my dad was a phenomenal man. Yeah.
I know this is a business show, right? And I know we typically talk about business, but you know what's interesting is that when you get to know the motivation behind somebody, you actually understand a little bit more about why they run the things they do. Mm-hmm. Tell me the one thing you remember learning from him. What is the one, and I know you've learned lots, what is the one defining characteristic that you've learned?
Well, when it comes to business, he had one saying. He goes, Jeff, if you work for pennies, you're going to make pennies. And that kind of stuck with me my whole life, is that what he was saying, the flip side of that is, why would you limit your thinking? And I think that's what really, I mean, he hated his job. He hated it. He wouldn't let any of us, he was a phenomenal salesperson and wouldn't teach any of his children how to sell. He did not want us in that profession. And that was his thing. He goes, I hate this stinking job. All I do is collect pennies. And literally I'd go to work with my dad and he'd go door to door collecting a dollar a week. And I remember when he got it up to $2 a week, he thought it was phenomenal. And you know, from his customers, that was before there were credit cards and stuff like that. So it was very humbling, if you will, awakening. And then the other thing is, he always said, you could do whatever you want. He goes, you'll never be the best, but you always want to strive to be the best at whatever you do. And that's on all four of his children. That's driven all of us,
That's amazing. Now, earlier in the conversation, you spoke about making your own luck and being open to suggestion, right?
Yeah.
And one of your defining characters, Jeff, because I know you well enough where I know you like helping people in all the best ways, right? And you talk about, and it, sometimes it's challenging to hear. We were talking about the ascension versus the descension model for pricing. I know you've given other people suggestions as well. One of the things I'd like to know from you is how you figure out who your mentors are. So if you listen to, let me just put this question into context. If you listen to everybody, I would have a feeling that you would be kind of all over the place. If you actually took everybody's advice and kind of try to run with everything, it just wouldn't make any sense. There would be no cohesion in the plan that you operate. So how do you figure out what is worthwhile to listen to?
Well, first of all, I'm an avid reader. I've got like literally 6 books sitting right on my shelf now that are at least 300 pages that I've got to read in the next couple of weeks. But what I look for, when I look for a mentor, I want somebody who's been in my shoes and has walked the walk and been successful at it. But I used to tell my kids as they were growing up, look, you listen to everybody. You listen to everybody who's willing to talk to you. And then based on that knowledge, you make what you think is the best decision for you. And I listen, I listen, I read, I do everything. And you know, you read a 300-400 page book and maybe you get one half an idea out of it. And you go with it, but I really look to see who the hacks are and who the people are who are genuinely interested in my welfare and have something very, very worthwhile to say. My mentor was my father's best friend. He was a CPA. And my dad said he could do rings around him, but couldn't go to college because I told you about the circumstances. But I remember my first deal, I was right out of college and I got into a real estate deal and I was selling real estate to earn my way through college. And I got into my first deal and all of a sudden one day I woke up and realized because I was a realtor, I wrote the contract for my own deal and I wrote it wrong.
Oh.
And nobody picked up on it. And luckily, everything shook out perfectly. But my mentor said, Jeff, if you can't afford a lawyer, you don't belong in the deal. And it was like, oh my God. And then I think about it. Well, if you can't afford an accountant, if you can't afford the right professionals to help you along, then you're playing the wrong game. And so, yeah, there. Wow, you got me on a real tangent, James.
that's the lovely thing about the podcast. I get to sit here and throw lob a question once every 10 minutes and then but it's great though. But Jeff, everything you say is valuable.
Yeah, but the reality is, James, is you want advice from people who've been in your shoes. And I know when I look at most of the consultants out there, they want to manage millions of dollars and they don't have $400 to their name. And it kind of irritates me. and they were middle managers and never ever experienced the stress, frustration, the loneliness of being a business owner. Everybody thinks, as soon as you say you have your own business, everybody thinks you're filthy rich. Mm-hmm. And quite the contrary, the majority of us as business owners are starving to death.
Yeah.
Until we hit that breaking point, that inflection point where everything starts gelling.
Yes.
And that's what we, I mean, we're in it for the adrenaline rush, if you want to know the truth. And, yeah, and that's what keeps me going.
It takes 50 years off your life, but you're right. You know, question for you, because you've done this. This is not your first rodeo, as they say, right? You've built and sold a number of businesses, or they've crashed, right? They've burned. They haven't been successful, and that's okay too.
Right.
How do you know when to dig in? How do you know when to press on if something? Because let's be honest. There's no linear business. And when I mean that, there's
right.
no business that you start and it just rides and everything is hunky-dory and in a year you're profitable, then 10 years you sell it for $50 billion and you're done, right? It doesn't work that way. You know, this like nothing, 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 nothing. Oh, there's something. Okay, maybe we have momentum now, but you got to get through the nothing or the negative even to be right. able to get there. How do you determine what is worth it and what is not?
The question is, what is worth it?
How do you know which businesses to ride? How do you know when to shut it down?
So, you know, now that I'm where I am, nobody asks me about my failures. And some of them were significant. And the song is, you got to know when to hold them and when to fold them. Mm. And a lot of times you don't know that. Like, for instance, I know that I've been successful only because it's behind me, mm-hmm. not in front of me. You don't know until you sell the business or get rid of it, because you could even have a great business. Like I was dealing with somebody yesterday. They went from 3 million to 10 million, and then they can't figure out why they're making less money than they did at 3 million. And we finally figured out their pricing model was wrong. But you just don't know. You really don't. And you've got to ask yourself, step out of your being, if you will, and say, what can I change? Because tomorrow is going to be just like today unless you change something. And can I do that change? And if the answer is there's nothing I could change, that's a stopping point. Because you can't continue to lose money in a business. And that's where all of a sudden you go, oh my gosh. And that's how we came up with the seven number system, is we realized that there are seven numbers that really run the whole funnel of your business. And from lead generation all the way to cash in the bank. And it's fairly simple to see. And you look at these seven numbers and you go, what can I change? Now that's a macro view, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. But you go, what can I change? And if you're not willing to change, that's your first hurdle. The second one is, can you make the change? And if you look at it and say, if I change this, how does that impact the bottom line? If I change that, and everybody thinks, well, there's going to be one magic bullet. There's not one magic bullet. It's a whole series of little things you can improve that when you add them together, they make you very profitable.
Yes.
So, I'll go one step further, if you don't mind, James.
Sure.
At my peak, I owned 100. I was involved in, owned, and or was a partner in 156 companies. And I was managing them in less than 10 hours a week, teaching at the University of Colorado, and was working less than 40 hours a week. Everybody remembers that. Nobody remembers the part where I worked 24/7, getting those systems down. And it took me 3 to 4 years to get it down so I could do that kind of volume with that little work.
Yeah. Amazing. Tell me, but you're basically saying, I worked my, if I'm interpreting properly, let me say it a little more crassly than you, but you worked your butt off for the first few years.
I still do. I love working. Yeah. I mean, My wife's biggest complaint is I spend too much time in my office.
Well, you managed to retire. What was it, for 18 hours? You said once.
Once was 24 hours. So 24 hours. It was last a year ago, January 15th. I sold my business and I was leaving for Australia. My daughter married an Australian and lives in Australia. So we signed everything, got everything done 2 hours before I was leaving for the airport. And by the time we landed in Australia, I said to my wife, I've got another business. I've got another new goal. So that one was about 24 hours.
Yeah.
When I retired, I saw the crash coming in 2007. I was heavy in real estate. And I unloaded my home build, I liquidated my home building business and sold to my partners because they didn't believe we were going to hit a crash, my land development business. I got my last check May 31st, 2007. And I figured, okay, I'm set. Mm-hmm. I don't need to do anything. And I was teaching at the University of Colorado, economics, by the way, not business, arts and parties, not business school. Mm-hmm. And I love biking. And I biked about 2,000, 3,000, 2,000 miles that year.
Amazing.
And I said to my wife, this is boring. Where right now I love just going and getting into my biking gear, jumping on my bike and riding 25, 30, 40 miles. That's because it gives me time to think about what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But when that's all you look forward to, it's boring as hell. It's like people want to retire. And I go, that's your ticket to dying.
That is true, right?
Yeah.
So I want to get to this. I want to get to your current project, but I want to ask you one question first. So I will ask you about the CFO project. Tell me about your biggest failure in business and what did you learn from it?
My biggest failure. Okay. So I told you I retired three times. The first time was when I was 42.
Amazing.
And so I got into this thing, audiobooks. I loved audiobooks. So I said to my wife, let's create an audiobook company. Now, I knew nothing about it. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So we hired a producer. We hired talent. And what we did is we had custom books written for us, designed from the beginning to be recorded as audio. And we had it acted out. And I looked at the industry, and it was supposedly a $1 billion industry at the time. This is 1992, I think. And so I got involved with the Audio Publishers Association, and I remembered it was my first meeting. I had no background in this, and I'm at the meeting, and I said, I'd like to be on the board of directors. And they go, well, what's your background? And I go, well, I'm kind of an anomaly. I'm a CPA. And one of the board members, Seth Kirshen, I think was his name, from Simon & Schuster, said, we haven't done our taxes since we started this association. Let's vote him in.
Oh, my goodness.
So I got voted on the board of directors after being in the business. But what I learned is the statistics were lies. And we hit our target of 2% of the market, but the market was 3/4 less than what they said it was based on the way they collected statistics. And that's when I knew I was going to lose it. And we had investors and everything. And yeah, that was my worst failure.
So what was the biggest learning out of that?
Stick to the knitting. I didn't know that industry. I didn't know it well enough. And that's an old thing from, I forgot the guru back in the 70s. I can't think of his name, but he had something, stick to the knitting. In other words, do what you know best and don't do what you don't know. And what we forget is, here I am 42, but I've been a CPA for over 18, 19 years. And I knew my trade. But to assume that I could learn a different thing in a different discipline overnight is false. We forget about how much learning we've done to get where we are. We take it for granted because what I do is very easy for me. But I forget about all the learning that it took for me to be able to connect dots as quickly as I do. And that's it. There's no substitute for experience. That's probably the biggest lessons.
It's interesting, right? Because, I mean, you know, what was the term? Stay with the knitting. Is that the
right
term?
Yeah, stick with the knitting.
Stick with the knitting. At the same time, you almost wonder how much relevance it has to you, not only in building a business, but working in the business as well, right? As business owners, especially in the beginning, you tend to take on everything. You tend to take on the bookkeeping, the marketing, the operations, the product creation, the website design. Like it just goes on and on and on these days, right?
Too many hats.
There's so many hats and you suck at all of them. Sorry, but if you spend that many much time doing all of them, you just can't have
you can't do it. And you're not focused on what you're good at. The thing that makes you money.
In fact, I think the irony is that you actually tend to focus on things you're not good at because it takes you four times as long to do those things as it should. And so you're spending 80% of the time on things that you're terrible at and quite frankly shouldn't be touching, and 20% of the time doing what your actual gift is.
Right.
And that's the challenge, right?
Right.
So, okay, tell me about this, the CFO project.
Well, this is kind of cool. We went through a merger April 7th. What we've done, and it's really incredible. We figured out all big businesses have CFOs, chief financial officers. Now, we are not your traditional accountant. What we do is we take the numbers and move you forward. And say, here's what you need to do. Here's where you should be focusing your time, energy, and money on. And it's very different than bookkeeping, which is focused on your past, your accountant, your tax advisor. They're all focused on the past. We focus on the future. There's not a whole bunch of us, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. Well, what we did is we figured out a way to make this affordable and accessible to small to medium-sized businesses. We created a system where we do it for you. You don't have to understand accounting. You don't have to understand numbers. You don't have to understand finance. We take that burden off of you, show you what to look at, when to look at it, how to interpret it, and more importantly, what you need to do about it to get to the next level. And to me, this is as exciting as I could get in my profession. This is the epitome of what we do.
Sure. Tell me what. Give me a good case study. Give me something that you started working with, what they had before, and then you worked with them for a few months, and then what they came out with.
I got so many stories, but one of the biggest problems we come into is pricing. And believe it or not, I learned more about pricing as an economist than I did as an accountant. Because accountants focus on just one thing, is what's your gross margin, if you will. Whereas as an economist, we start talking about perceived value, which is very different than economic value in a way. And like for instance, we just dealt with a manufacturer. And they weren't making money. They were working harder and harder, and they thought volume, that's a misnomer. Volume is going to solve everything, all right? And we found out that they were selling their product for, their measurement was square feet, for $57 a square foot, and it was costing them $70 to produce it.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's before overhead.
Oh my gosh. So they're losing $13 before overhead on every square foot they produce.
Right. And you go, okay, now what do we do? And then we dealt with all the objections of raising prices and finally said, well, you got two choices. You could close down or you could raise your prices. And they go, well, the market won't sustain it. I go, that's because your value proposition isn't there. And that's a marketing question. Mm-hmm. And then we pulled in good people like you to help us with it. And we solved the perception problem. And now we're getting money and we're turning them around.
So let me get this right. They were losing $13 a square foot. They were trying to produce more and more square feet, which means they're losing more and more money. And And they were trying to do it through quote unquote economies of scale, right? They thought maybe more volume would, and you could just work faster.
Right.
So what happened there? Did they raise the price? Did they change the product line?
Well, we got them to raise the price, change their marketing message, do a little bit with their target market. And through all that, we got them turned around.
Good. Then they're still around now?
Yeah, they are. Whew. They are. And but we see all kinds of problems. Traditionally, people are focused on top line growth, sales.
Yeah.
Without consideration of what happens with those sales dollars. How much goes into the product, how much goes into overhead. Then they get to the next level where they focus on profit. And these are probably my three things if you mm-hmm. want.
Yeah.
Profit is an accounting construct. It's not real. Okay, because it doesn't take into consideration owner's withdrawal, debt repayment, inventory acquisition, receivable financing. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that aren't even involved in that number profit. So what we have to do is then take them from top line to profit to cash.
Right.
If you don't have more cash, it's very simple in a business. Accounting doesn't realize this, but as a business owner, all you think about is cash coming in has to be greater than cash going out, short term, immediately short term and long term.
Yes.
It's the only way to make money.
Yeah.
All right. And if you focus on that and get your numbers to tell you how you're doing on cash formation, yeah. all the other answers come out. And let's face it, you could solve all your problems with cash.
Yes. Yes. You could just throw more cash at things, right? So,
well, you don't want to throw it at it, but you want to use it wisely.
Jeff, if you want to ever throw cash at me, you're more than welcome.
Yeah. And that's what I say to my clients. Yeah. but yeah, it's like cash is the most important thing yeah. in running a business.
No, but, you're absolutely right. It's interesting, isn't it? And you know, let's be honest, with the right accounting tricks, you can make yourself as profitable as you want to, so to speak.
Right.
Right. That is just something you can do. Or in taxation purposes, as less profitable as you can. Right. Right. There's all sorts of tricks in there. But you're right. Cash is king at the end of the day.
Right. Let me just tell you one other little story, if I could.
Yeah.
I remember giving a lecture at the International Builders Conference, and I had an audience of about 500 people. And I said to them, how many of you would like to pay no taxes? How many hands do you think went up?
All of them.
Right. And I go, by the way, you want to know my goal? One year I'd like to owe $1 million in taxes.
Yep.
And you see their eyes open up. It's like, oh my God. Yeah, you don't want to pay taxes for the majority of us. That means you made no money.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
and you by know, the way, taxes are a cost of doing business.
Yes.
And on most financials, it doesn't even show up. If you're an S-Corp, a partner, I'm talking U.S. taxation.
Yeah.
S-Corp partnership, sole proprietorship, your salary doesn't even show up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's but you're right. I think, you know, when as you would say it, right? You don't have a problem paying taxes. It's like you don't have a problem, you know, the answer is not always to save money. The answer is you have a cash flow problem.
You can't right? save your way to prosperity.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to do something that adds value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's probably the wisest thing, right? Okay. Because we kind of integrated everything. Tell me those three tips in a hurry again. What are the three tips for the business owner to improve the business or the business owner? What are those three tips again, Jeff?
Well, basically, yes, focus on top line growth. Yes, focus on profit. But the most important thing is cash flow. And there are things that do not show up in your profit and loss, regardless of which country you do your accounting in, because I've done international accounting as well. Regardless, if you're not thinking in terms of cash in, cash out, you miss the whole point of being in business.
Yeah, nope, that's very fair. Thank you for sharing all your wisdom today. I really appreciate it. And Jeff, I always enjoy our conversations anyways, I have to tell you. So it's been a pleasure getting to know you not a little bit better, but a lot better now about your business background. Thank you for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure, James. I always enjoy my time on the phone with you.
Perfect. We're on Zoom, by the way, folks. We're on the phone. You're old school, Jeff.
Yeah, I am. But I'm a little older than most of you.
And don't forget, nobody actually speaks on the phone anymore. You just use it to text people, which is funny because you have these long, elaborate conversations via text, and it's just very weird. But I know you know that already. All right, team. We're going to wrap it up there. Look, Jeff, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. That's Jeff Prager from the CFO Project. He is the cash flow king. My name is James Lamb from 3-Step to Thrive. Every week we bring on successful and interesting, and you certainly qualify for both, Jeff, in this case, people on the show. They leave three tips to improve either yourself or the business. Now, Jeff, one more question. If people wanted to reach out to you, what's the easiest way for them to do that?
Two ways. Our website is thecfoproject.com, thecfoproject.com. And if you want to reach out to me directly, it's jeff@thecfoproject.com.
Perfect. And that's just traditional Jeff, team. So J-E-F-F, there's no yes. G, there's no Y in there. There's no fancy spelling in there. So perfect. So again, we'll put those elements in the show notes as well, so you have access to it, team. All right. But look, I appreciate each and every one of you. As you know, one more thing, and you already know the drill, team. If you haven't yet, please go on and please rate and review the show. That is the easiest way to get our information out to the world and to people, small business owners and medium-sized business owners who need this information. So think about, if every guest leaves three tips for you to grow, think about what you could learn in one show, in three shows, in five shows. You get 15 tips to make yourself or the business better. Those are key to growing, and you're talking about successful, established business owners. So team, thank you so much. I appreciate each and every one of you. Same time, same place next week, and I'll talk to you then. Bye for now.
Don't forget, if you love this podcast, please leave a review. One of my goals is to support as many entrepreneurs and small business owners as possible with these simple, actionable, and practical tips. My team and I spend countless hours finding great guests who are experts in their field, and these people 100% volunteer to be on this show. And one of the best ways to help other people find this podcast is with your review. So if you would be so kind and subscribe and leave a review, this show can get out to more people, and I would be forever grateful. So thank you in advance. Okay, guys, thanks so much once more for tuning in. See you next week, and have a great few days.